from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, tension is building in Egypt following the government's crackdown on opponents as the nation's next round of elections approaches. We'll talk with Hassan Bagat, founder of the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights, a Cairo-based human rights organization. He'll join us to discuss the state of civil liberties in Egypt and the latest political developments there. Then, as violence escalates in Venezuela, we turn our attention to the ongoing crisis in that South American oil-rich post-Hugo Chavez nation, and Forum is up next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Well, many of you are following what's going on with respect to Crimea. In fact, the president spoke earlier today, but we wanted to focus in this hour on a couple of other places which are experiencing escalating government, protests against the government and escalating violence. In fact, in Egypt now, under military control, with internal conflicts and tensions mounting with violence against protesters and police, an election is upcoming and is a foregone conclusion that what's going to happen in that election will probably be the present general, el-Sisi, well, at least kept in power. So we want to look in this hour at the ongoing human rights challenges and struggles in Egypt. And we've invited Hassan Bagat, the founder and former executive director of the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights, to be with us. He's also the recipient of Santa Clara University School of Law's Alexander Prize for Legal Advocates, and he's here with us in studio. Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Congratulations on the Alexander Prize. And let's begin by talking about recent events in Egypt. The biggest roundup in two decades in terms of crackdown on Islamists, 16,000 jailed over the last 8 months. And as I said, rising militancy. Let's get a sense from you about what the effects are, particularly in terms of human rights, which has been your concern.
With the military takeover of government in July of last year, what has followed is, of course, unprecedented in scale. I mean, even in the times of Mubarak, when we left under, autocratic rule that imprisoned thousands of people without charge or trial, we were talking about a smaller scale than what we have right now. Definitely in terms of casualties, civilians that were that fell victim in mass killings of protesters by police and army forces with complete impunity and no accountability for any of those killings. That was followed, of course, with this mass incarceration that you mentioned, with where people are held in prolonged pre-trial detention on, politically motivated charges of either chanting slogans against the military or the police, or possession of leaflets, or participating in protests, and that has, as everyone predicted, of course, not stopped at the Islamists that were the primary opponent of the current military regime. It's a slippery slope. So once this was achieved, the repression reached leftists, secularists, student activists, journalists that are now being prosecuted and put on trial, also on terrorism charges, and then a blanket repressive law on protests was passed that made it possible for the police to even arrest more people at will and without any evidence against them. With that, of course, the economic situation continues to be extremely difficult. The socioeconomic policies in place are exactly the same as those that were in place under Mubarak. And so inequality is increasing and economic hardships are increasing. And that has led, to the return of labor protests and socioeconomic protests that the government is also using violence to respond to, with the complete manipulation of both public and privately owned media in order to prevent these voices of dissent and anger from penetrating mainstream media.
The police are also tied to the Interior Ministry, and trials are taking place of civilians before military courts, which has created a great deal of anger. And I know that many of the inmates, from reports I've read, have undergone beatings and sleep deprivation, threats of rape, all kinds of things along those lines, which are a form of terror from the government. But also, the Muslim Brotherhood has dedicated itself, supposedly, to overturning this government because they feel that Morsi was democratically elected, and they feel, perhaps justifiably, righteously, that General Assisi is not the man who should be in power here. So there is violence coming on both sides. I mean, they call General Assisi a mass murderer, and they've said that, you know, he has to be overthrown. Yeah.
Well, I think General Assisi is a mass murderer. I think he should be held accountable for all the killings that he ordered since he assumed power in July. But in all fairness, the Interior Ministry is. The police are able to perpetrate these egregious human rights violations precisely because when the Muslim Brotherhood were in power for 1 year and before that had parliamentary majority, they did absolutely nothing to change the practices of the Interior Ministry and the security sector under Mubarak.
Maybe the problem is in Egypt that the people think there's got to be one or the other. There's got to be Islamic law and an Islamic regime, or it's got to be a military regime.
The problem is the Muslim Brotherhood had all the power that they needed. They reached the presidency and the parliamentary majority. They wanted to keep the state that they inherited under Mubarak, but to take it over. They did not want to change it or democratize it. And because of their refusal to introduce changes to the police conduct, to increase the penalties for torture, to end these abusive practices of the Mubarak era security forces, now we have gone a full cycle. Now the Muslim Brotherhood have gone from being in power to being the victim of these very institutions that they refused to reform. You're absolutely right. What I think most young people in Egypt would like to see is a third choice, is a choice that is not military dictatorship and is not necessarily a fundamental Islamist regime. They want the slogans of the revolution.
They also want jobs.
Exactly. I mean, the revolution slogan was bread, freedom, social justice, and they want that. And, none of this is going to be achieved by a military dictator. And as we saw from practice, it was not achieved by an Islamist government.
It is depressing when you think about all the promise with the Arab Spring, and yet you look right next door in Tunisia and things are moving along a much more democratic plane and trajectory.
I think the main difference with Tunisia, and of course I'm following it closely. The main difference is that the political rivals there, also secularists and Islamists, and again dealing with an angry and politicized citizenry, the main difference is that these rivals had to act in a responsible way as grown-ups and resolve their conflicts without going to the military, without going to daddy try and influence the military. Military to take sides in a conflict, really using the force of being the only bearer of arms in the country to resolve political conflicts, and that's why what we're seeing in Tunisia, which has been bumpy, is negotiations and peaceful resolution of natural political conflicts after years of autocratic rule that did not allow for a healthy political environment to emerge. In Egypt, we were robbed of this opportunity, but I still don't think that it's too late, because the military now wants to actually field the field marshal Sisi into the candidacy for presidency. He's going to, as you predicted, be elected by something ridiculous, maybe 95% of the vote. With that will
come, won't be as high as Kim Jong-un in North Korea, maybe a few percentage less.
Yeah, maybe he will reach that as well. I mean, there's nothing to stop that. It's definitely not going to be a real election, not necessarily because it's going to be rigged, but because, no other serious candidate is going to oppose the military institution.
So the election is not to be taken seriously. What about the Constitution? You got human rights provisions in this Constitution and so forth?
Yes, we fought for good human rights conditions. We have a human rights chapter of the Constitution that is an improvement, but we also have other chapters that completely insulate the military from any civilian civilian oversight that that sort of encode the military trials of civilians, and you don't have the political institutions or the impartial judiciary to actually enforce these constitutional protections. What is going to happen is that the accountability will come and haunt Sisi, I think. If he wins, and if he wins with this, you know, ridiculous percentage, then people are going to say, okay, fine, you did everything you wanted to do. We gave you the mandate to fight the so-called war on terror. We elected you to power. What about these power cuts? What about our wages? What about all these, you know, economic issues? And what about, you know, the infrastructure that is falling apart? And unless Sisi and the military want to really completely change course and rebuild the state that has been falling apart for many years now, and they haven't shown any signs that they want to do that, then I think it's only a matter of time before people start holding him accountable for these failures and, you know, again, going back to demanding bread, freedom, and social justice.
And things will inevitably erupt again. One can almost predict. We don't need a crystal ball to assume that. We're talking to Hossam Bagat, if you've just joined us, founder of the Cairo-based Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights and recipient of the Santa Clara University School of Law's Alexander Prize for Legal Advocates. This is a half-hour segment. We're going to be talking about Venezuela in the next half hour. So if you would like to join us, if you have a question about the ongoing rise of militancy in Egypt and the upcoming election and General Sisi's rule, which, as we've heard from Hossam Bagat, is probably surpassing that of the authoritarianism that we saw under Mubarak at the height of Mubarak's power, you may want to join us. Let me tell you how you can do that now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone call, so feel free to join the program. 866-733-6786 is the number to call as we talk about tension building in Egypt following the government's crackdown on opponents as the next round of elections approaches, and talking about the founder of the Egyptian Initiative of Personal Rights, Cairo-based human rights organization. Number of other ways to join this morning's program and the conversation: you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have immediately onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And here's a web comment right away from Ben, who says, the government crackdown was on Islamists, whose main goal was to create an Islamic State. The Muslim Brotherhood is a radical group that has been connected to numerous extremist groups. Revolutions are very seldom bloodless.
Being presented with a choice between the military or the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's exactly what Mubarak used for 30 years to justify his autocratic rule. We were all active during the Muslim Brotherhood rule in documenting abuses and restrictive laws that were passed by them, but also human rights violations and abuses by the police forces that the Muslim Brotherhood failed to stop and even at times encouraged. But as you learned in this country, the answer is not to declare this vague war on terror and give unchecked power to whoever is in government to do whatever it takes to deal with this threat. I recognize that there is a threat of terrorism in Egypt. There is violence. But if you look at Egypt today, violence is much worse today than it was when the military took over in July, because when you shut out an entire sector of society, and you ban the most organized political organization that has won every election since the ouster of Mubarak, and you declare that there is no room for this organization, for this very influential political actor in the political process, then the only answer is violence. What kind of message are you sending to young people of an Islamist leaning who are peaceful and who wanted to participate in politics, and suddenly they are being arrested only for being Islamist?
For putting up posters or holding signs. I mean, there's just a total ban on the Muslim Brotherhood. I understand that. But also in this picture and part of the calculus is the fact that al-Sisi has also broken off relations with Hamas. And under Morsi, there was some hope that those kind of bridges could lead to at least something positive. At one point, it actually did. There was a brokered peace because of the connection to Hamas that Morsi had. But I want to get back to just something else with you, if I could, Mr. Bagat, and that is, I have some Egyptian friends who were saying that under Morsi, there was a much more of a kind of repression. It wasn't coming through statutory or legal dictates, but much more of a sense that women couldn't dress a certain way and that women were being essentially authoritarian, given orders in terms of how they should comport themselves and mistreated and treated as objects to a much greater degree. Is that pretty much something that you would observe or that you would say is true? And again, I'm not saying that this was done by the Morsi government deliberately, but because of the feeling that we have an Islamic government in place here, we can be more repressive on a day-to-day level with women.
Yes, it started, of course, there was a lot of apprehension. This was the first time in Egypt to have an Islamist government in power. And the Muslim Brotherhood, in turn, had the responsibility to actually reach out to women and to non-Muslims and to seculars and, send a forceful message that, every citizen is going to be equal before the law and that they are going to be, a government for all. Initially, when Morsi was running for president, he surrounded himself with these, seculars and Christians and women. He pledged to appoint them as vice presidents. After he was elected, he appointed some presidential aides, again, one Christian and one woman and a few seculars. But immediately afterwards, the Muslim Brotherhood actually started adopting a discourse that was going in exactly the other direction. And when they had the opportunity to, draft the constitution through a body that was completely dominated by them, they removed from the constitution, the only reference to gender being a prohibited ground of discrimination, for instance. They introduced into the constitution for the first time an official role of Al-Azhar, the religious institution, where in Sunni Islam we don't know any, religious hierarchy. They introduced a formal role and made Al-Azhar the official Sunni Islam institution, the only, adjudicator of Sharia issues. So it wasn't really by imposing stricter dress codes or discriminatory laws against Coptic Christians that they spread this apprehension and fear, but it was through indirectly sending a message that suddenly women and Christians were second-class citizens. And that, of course, has immediately, again, that's anecdotally, but you can feel that this was translated into a rise in societal bias and violence and sometimes harassment of both women and Christians.
And probably more anti-Westernism as well. I'm just wondering, though, about a poll I saw which suggests that over 80% of Egyptians plan on participating in this upcoming election. It's lower for young people. But what do you make of that? If the fix is in, if he has no opposition, why even vote? Why have this extraordinary percentage of voters? It's almost twice of what you get often in the United States.
There are different motivations here. There are people that genuinely feel that the military is the only institution that has lasted and endured all the troubles of the last 3 years. There are people that feel, that believe the relentless propaganda machine of the government, that there is a global conspiracy led by the United States and Israel and Iran and Turkey and Qatar and Hamas and Hezbollah and everyone to undermine Egypt, and that the only answer to this is to elect Sisi, who is going to fix everything and resolve all their problems. But as you, I think, correctly and crucially pointed out, when we had in January a referendum on the new constitution of this, military-backed government, it was the first time since the ouster of Mubarak in all of these elections that there was a significantly low turnout by young people of age 18 to 35. And that has actually made even the military very nervous, because it's a sign of anger. It's a sign that these young people, who were the leaders of the revolution, who were the first to take to the squares to oust Mubarak and then the Muslim Brotherhood, that they are angry and that they are boycotting the political process, and that this anger, if not expressed in the ballot boxes, could be expressed on the street, and they didn't want that. And so if you look at the one segment in society that matters the most and that the military and the new authorities fear the most, it is urban, university-educated, middle-class, young people that use the internet. And these people are significantly angry, and their anger is increasing with time. And, you know, Egypt is a country that has, you know, two-thirds of the population below the age of 40. And so demographics are certainly not in favor of any repressive government.
Again, if you've just joined us, Hossein Bagat is our guest, and he is the founder of the Cairo-based Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights. Let me bring a caller on here. Abdul, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for the discussion. My question is, I'm American of African descent, and, you know, I supported Obama, and I knew that there are a lot of things that he couldn't change in even two terms as an elected president, African-American. And I think the same thing goes for Morsi. I think your criticism of Morsi is not based on realism, on utopian. You know, if you think he can change the military and police infrastructure in less than a year, you know, I think the man wasn't given a chance.
Comment on that, Hossein Bagat? Good.
No, I appreciate, of course, that the difficulties were immense for any, you know, civilian who is elected for the first time as president in a country that's never had a civilian president. Morsi was elected in July of 2012. And between July and November, for many of these months, we were all, even those of us that were never supportive of the Muslim Brotherhood, we were all, you know, coming forward with proposals and ideas, supporting him and supporting his government. We really wanted him to succeed. And there was barely there was hardly any opposition to his rule. It was only when he decided in November of that year to issue a decree, announcing that all his decisions were immune from judicial oversight. And
that was a big turning point. That was a pivot. Yeah.
I mean, since then, from November, really, it was, it was the end of any possibility of him succeeding. And it wasn't that he was trying to introduce reforms but unable to because of opposition from the state bureaucracy. It was actually that he was moving in the wrong direction.
There's a lot of fear of economic losses, too, under him that I think has to be figured into that. There's a lot of moneyed people that became, well, moneyed because of the Mubarak regime. Let me get another caller on, though. Jenny, that's you. Good morning.
Oh, hi. I'm wondering if there's any public concern or announcement from religious leaders in Egypt that the Quran is encouraging more peaceful coexistence rather than absolute authoritarianism and exclusion of, like, discrimination against Christian or females or...
That's a good question, Jenny. I mean, are any of the imams in Egypt or the Muslim religious leaders talking about, shall we say, a more diverse and accepting version of the Quran?
I mean, part of the crackdown that we are seeing right now and part of the attempt by the current government to control public opinion has been a war, really, to take over mosques. We have the Minister of Religious Endowments deciding last week to actually annex and nationalize 100% of the country's mosques as part of the government. We have, for the first time in the country, I mean, in a, you know, a country that's always been Muslim, we have a mandatory, unified Friday sermon that is circulated to all imams with instructions about what they are to say. And there is, I mean, the sphere that is available for religious discourse is being restricted just as much as the sphere that is available for dissent and secular opposition.
We'll have to leave it there. Hossein Bagat, thank you so much for joining us again. Congratulations on the Alexander Prize. I'm Michael Krasny.